the best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back to our program this morning. A gentleman, we spoke to him just last week. And I'm sure that we'll be speaking to him much more moving forward. And that, of course, is political leader, PP Philip Edward Alexander. Good morning to you. Welcome back to the show. It's nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Satish. Thanks for having me again. Was it only a week ago?
I think it was. I'm subject to correction, but it feels like it was last week. Maybe it was longer.
It's just a blur. That election, I can't tell you how much days, weeks, months, hours passed. It was just a blur. Wake up, get busy, and get home, sleep, and do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, but
Thank you very much for having me. Good morning to your listeners. This is not video. This is just audio, right?
Yeah, this is just audio. This is just audio.
All right.
This morning. So the election has come and gone. Our discussions prior to the elections focused on whether or not people would heed the call to do something different, to accept something different, to give something different a chance, because that's what we hear all the time. Clarion call, we want different, we're fed up with what exists. The results didn't suggest to us that that was what people really wanted. I'm sure that several days after the election, you would have sat with your team and you would have looked at all that transpired. Let's get from you your summary of this experience for local government elections. It was the largest effort by your party since its inception. What are some of the pros and cons that came out of the campaign and eventually the results?
Okay, answer for the question. I want to tell you though that I have not yet been able to meet with the team because everybody exhausted. We're having our first feedback session Saturday. I mean, we're talking online, we have our groups and threads and stuff, but we've given everybody a break because we literally threw everything at it. Let me give you an example. Our last motorcade Sunday, when we were at the office headquarters on Park Street, we literally said, everything orange in the building, bring it. We're giving it away. Because we went out there to just finish the campaign. And all of our teams, our finance teams, our leadership team, I mean, everybody was on the ground working, evangelizing. But my assessment, and based on conversations I've had with the public and with people of the party, is that we went backwards as a nation. We didn't go forward. This was such a hotly contested election that everybody assumed that the turnout was going to be higher than 50%. It was supposed to be massive. And it was the opposite occurred. Somebody tell me that is PNM OBR, that they're good at that election day people get mind fog and they forget that today is supposed to be, and I think maybe this embargo on advertising on election day should be outlawed. I think we should advertise heavier on election day. The noise on election day should be bigger. The motorcades, the walkabouts, people should be able to campaign all through the land on election day and tell people, go and vote. This is the democratic process. You have a chance today to change your life. Come out. But we don't do that. Election day, we go quiet. And that to me, that's the opposite of the process. The feedback I am getting from people, from everyday people, business owners, the cashier in the grocery, and the guy who's putting stuff in the bag for me, all of them said the same thing. That people are not voting because they're not getting nothing for their vote. They don't believe that it's going to make a difference. So people are retreating further and further into race. The PNM won this, or the UNC and the PNM tied, the UNC got the majority vote, but they won this on less than 300,000 people out of 1.4 million people. And that is a sad indictment on the reality of Trinidad and Tobago, because it means that for Trinidad, because of the apathy of the voters, because of failure of governments over the years to live up to their promises, that the democratic process is in crisis. You think people don't change governments with votes? What are you going to change it with? That's the conversation that should be preoccupying everybody's minds right now. If people stop believing in elections to fix the country. Where do we go from there?
Well, I remember during our discussions with you and with my discussions with the others, I was sharing my opinion that all the positive responses that everybody was getting on the campaign trail was Mamagai. Because how else do you describe it? When everyone that in a campaign you speak to says to you that there is overwhelming support and people can't wait to go and vote and they're glad we went to the Privy Council and every single thing, they're dissatisfied with everybody and everything under the sun. And they're going out, and then on election day, you have the lowest voter turnout in local government election history. It says that these people who meet candidates just telling them what they want here at the point in time and have no real desire to go out and make that difference that they say they want. And somebody sent a message yesterday. We had a discussion with one of the callers, and it was interesting. He was suggesting exactly what you're suggesting, that the voter apathy stems from the fact that some people believe in their minds that their vote is useless, that it's worthless, and that the way the systems are designed, it will make no difference. So why go through all of this process of casting a ballot when at the end of the day it's not going to change anything? And there may be some validity to that argument when we see that the UNC got more votes than the PNM, but we remain the same way as 2019. So as somebody who is the head of a party that speaks about the change that we need, you really think citizens want that change?
Well, you see, you always so spot on with your analysis. But I want to tell you, I don't think it's Mamagai. I think that when we there in your community, the songs playing, the flags waving, the jerseys sharing, people hugging and kissing and people talking and you get a chance to talk. And in that moment, you feel like, you know, there is the possibility something could come out of this. And then election day, wake up and you say, but what's the real point of this? They've been telling me this for years. And I'm saying to you again, I want to go back to that idea of us being able to campaign on election day. And I want to talk to lawyers to find out what is required to get that law changed. Because I think that candidates should build up their frenzy up to election day, up to 5:59:59. Because we could have brought out hundreds of thousands of people, motorcades, and you understand what I'm saying? Get the people down to the booth. Dego Martin, if you're dealing with Dego Martin, community by community, you're going up there, you have your fleet of vehicles, you don't have a car, come, we're taking you down and bringing you back home. And all the parties would be on the ground, and it would be a carnival, it would be a vibrant day. That's how election day should be. It shouldn't be this dead, nobody can talk, nobody can advertise. If you mention your party name, people want to call police. That is stupidness. It should be the opposite. Don't you agree on that? Don't you think about it?
Well, I understand the value of what it is you're suggesting. And
what is the value of how it is now?
Well,
how does that benefit us?
I think, and I've spoken to the gold commanders in elections gone by, the reason that they've put forward, even though that might not necessarily be the law, is there is the opinion that tensions may be too high on election day, and having that kind of activity with persons in large groups congregating from different political parties could turn into a violent situation. As to whether or not that's true or not, or whether that will happen or not, I can't tell you. That's the school of thought. As to why we don't have campaigns.
When I was young, I remember invented a tool that you held it in your hand and it stuck out between your fingers and then it spread out like a shovel that comes to a point. It's small and you could have stuck it into a coconut, twisted it, and it would open the coconut in your hand.
Right.
And it was such an amazing invention. A Trinidadian had invented it. And I saw an article in the papers where they said that this could be used to kill people. It didn't kill a single soul. But they had a picture of somebody with it in their hand pointing at another person's chest and say you could stab somebody in their chest and kill them. And they banned the thing. And I asked myself, so the premise is to find any possibility of danger and then ban it. There are trees in Trinidad that are highly poisonous. If you touch the tree, you could get sick and die. You know about that?
Mm.
Akash, Satish, you know about that?
Yeah, I've seen the signs on the various trees.
On those trees?
Yes.
I want to ask you a question. If you know that tree is that poisonous, it serves no purpose for society. None. Why don't you cut down that tree and replace it with something that could benefit society?
Well, listen.
Is it leveled?
I take your point, you know. I do. I understand what you're saying sometimes.
You see, when you answered me just now, right? You made a point. I get your point, but I'm saying that is laziness.
No, but that's not my point, you know. That wasn't my point.
No, I know it's not your point.
That's what I was told. Yeah.
I know it's not your point, but what I'm saying is that's laziness on the part of those with responsibility to manage the country.
Mm.
Because, I mean, so why does carnival not turn into violence then? You know what I mean? It makes no sense that you could say that because people are out on the road. Your job is not to put people in their house. Your job is to manage how the society handles itself. And if people are rubbing wrong to the point where you think that if they're out in the road, they will flare up into violence, then the society is being managed badly. And that needs to be addressed.
Mm. Let's get back to go ahead, finish.
I just think the hyper-racism in the political messages, if you tell me that, if you tell me the hyper-racism in the PNM and the UNC messages could cause violence, I'd tell you yes. But you could treat with that. You could make it so that there is an advertising code of ethics. You could make it so that there's a media code of ethics where, you know, on social media, there's something called community standards, yes?
Yes.
Mm. We could enforce that on a national level. Election day, community standards, no racism. No race baiting, no violence, no inciting. Those things you could say and hold people liable and responsible for that. Manage these situations. I think Trinidadians are a lot more intelligent than we give them credit for. I think that the problems we have, I have so many analogies to tell you today. This guy had taken over management of a base in America, and there was a bench. And there were two soldiers guarding the bench. And he asked them why they guard that bench. And they said, they don't know, they've always been guarding the bench. And he tried to find out why they'd have two soldiers deployed to guard this bench. And he eventually called the person who was in charge 3 leaders ago. And he asked him why these soldiers guarding that bench. And the fellow asked him why the paint's still wet.
Mm.
That's Trinidad. Trinidad, we just accept things. That's how it is. That's how it is. It shouldn't be. I was the first person to ask, why are our rivers designed to catch the water in the hills and throw it in the sea? Why aren't those same rivers taking that water through underground pipes? We know how to do underground pipes. To the reservoirs, we would never not have water.
Oh.
Anyway,
yeah,
this is your interview.
The Archbishop Gordon spoke about what we're talking about and what we spoke about this morning a bit. That's politicians dividing the country along. And he used the terminology of race, but he started out by saying that political leaders are tearing the nation apart. And from what you're saying, I'm assuming that you agree with the Archbishop 100%.
I agree with the point. I just don't think Jason Gordon understands it enough to say it. Because he's not putting enough substance. You can't say political parties. You can't say politicians. You're trying to be politically correct. But in situations like this, you need to put the grease to the squeaky wheel. And the squeaky wheel in Trinidad and Tobago is PNM and UNC race politics. That's what he wants to say. But he doesn't have the testicular fortitude to say. And he needs to understand. If he is going to be part of the conversation, he needs to be, because of the office he holds, he needs to be factual. He needs to drill down to where the actual problem exists so that he could lead. He's a leader. You can't just be all politicians. MSJ not tearing the country apart. PDP, Watson Duke not tearing the country apart. Michaela Pandey with her stall party, she not tearing the country apart. Not all politicians. Not even Gary with his nonsense tearing the country apart. It's PNM and UNC racist politics, race-baited. That tearing the country apart. That is what you need to deal with.
Yeah, we'll take a couple calls in just a bit, but let's look now to what's to come. The party contested the election. You got your vote, over 5,000 votes. And I'm sure that it would, in your mind, give you some sense of direction as to where the party needs to go, some of the things that you need to do, because the overall, the major prize now is 2025. What are some of the objectives of your political party heading towards 2025? And I know one of the discussions we are having on the fringes, and probably we'll have them in a more detailed way closer to the election, alliances. You're an alliance with the Reunited Farmers and alliances moving forward. Tell us about some of those.
Okay, so first of all, you asked about plans and you asked about alliances. So I'll touch on the plans first. We're going to double down. We are going to pivot from the local government election into the general election. We're going to stay in campaign mode. We're going to turn our candidates into shadow councillors, like we have shadow MPs. We're going to work. We're going to put our election machinery team to work screening people to get the full 39 or 41 shadow MPs, 39 or 41 because of Tobago. We didn't decide what we're doing with Tobago as a party. And we're going to aim for 141 shadow councillors. That gives us the ability to work on the ground as a political party directly with the people, with the voters, with the burgesses on the ground. And we'll be able to create an election machine out of that, ready for any election that they call. But we'd also be able to give the citizens direct representation. When people can't get PNM or UNC to deliver, we will fix it. I am personally going to double down my Philip Will Fix It campaign and try to get as many things publicly done every week, every day if possible, for the next 2 years. We're literally going to put everything in it here so that come 2025 or before, people would be able to say, look, we had a real choice. These people have real policies. They have real members. They're willing to do the work. They're in the communities. They're working in the communities. They've established themselves as having an understanding of the issues and are willing to establish relationships with the people to make sure that the delivery of government goods and services are phone call away. And we believe that will go a long way, because between August 14 and June 6, our party exploded. When all the others ganged up into an unethical little dotote vote nonsense, the people looked around to see who else was there, and all that was there was us. So they flirted with us and they dated us a little bit, and they say, you know what, I like what you're seeing. And by election day, everybody upset they don't have a PEP candidate in every district. And I want to explain to Trinidadians, and I'm going to repeatedly explain this to them. A real political party that don't have dirty money and drug money and political speculator money is a process of growth. You bring in people and you build and you put people in positions and they build their teams. All of that is a process and it takes time. And the Progressive Empowerment Party, 7 years old, is at a very advanced stage and will accelerate now that we have so many good key people in good key positions. With regards to alliances, and I want to tell you that's why the NTA couldn't contest the election on their own. I've said this all the time, that three letters at EBC doesn't make you a political party. It doesn't. You have to be able to literally do all of the things that a political party does to win an election. And that's what a political party is for, to contest and win an election. You can't do that. You're not a political party. To talk about alliances, I don't like that word. I don't like the word accommodations. We're going to find another word. But we are not, absolutely not, 100% zero interested in any of the existing political parties. We will have nothing to do alliance-wise with anybody in Trinidad. We are willing to enter into conversations with the people in Tobago. I like Farley's positions. Some of the things, think that we can assist them, they can assist us. I have never spoken a civil word in my life to Farley Augustine. So I don't want you to think that I'm saying this as part of something that's going on. I'm just saying that we're willing to talk to them. There's a movement called HOPE. They call themselves a political party, but they're a think tank like Tapia House, that is Timothy Ami Smith, Steve Alvarez, Louis Leasing, and now Karen Eunice, the sheriff, willing to talk to them to see if they're willing to come aboard and help us with the experiences they have at the management level. We need management advice and guidance because we want to broaden that aspect of the party. But we don't want to lose our ground appeal. We have strong ground appeal. The people that we're interested in working with are business communities, business organizations, farmers groups, workers groups, any organization of people not represented that feel that they're not represented by state, we want to give them a voice. We want the Progressive Empowerment Party to give them a voice. But none of the people who support the Progressive Empowerment Party, every now and then a person will find us and try to convince us that we need to link up because all they're interested in is getting their party in office. They're trying to use us. But this is not our first rodeo. We've been out here before. We're not interested in political alliances for expediency. When I told Tim Gopisingh that if Tamla Prasad Bisesa was ever serious about having a proper conversation, we'd be interested. I've said that publicly. I see a fella posting Philip wanted $1 million from the NC. $1 million is not money. If I was selling my soul to the devil, you would have to start to talk 50 million up. Now I'm not doing this for money. I've been in this for so long. I've been an activist for 30 years. I'm in this for a better country. I said to Tim Gopisingh, If the supporters of the UNC want us to talk, they need to be willing to do things to broaden the appeal of the party beyond a racist party. Kamla needs to have serious conversation about putting disciplinary measures in place for the party itself. You need to have clear guidelines as to how any accommodation would work. I heard Gary and Jack say they make no deals yet. They're just working together. That's a prescription for confusion. That's a prescription for argument. That's hustle and bob and weave. People fed up with that kind of politics. People want to know that they're dealing with a political organization that says this, 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 this. We believe in this. We stand for this. We stand against that. These are the policies that we want to enact once we get to the government. This is what underpins. This is the metrics. These are the budgets. These are the timelines. Follow us. That if we get into office, education will deliver this in the first short term, 12 months, and you can follow us first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, this is where we should be. And give them project management timelines. People want government that will it account to them. People want transparency, accountability. They want things that sound like you know what you're doing. That's what the Progressive Empowerment Party is selling. Mm. We're not selling politics of expediency. We're not interested in that.
We need to take a couple of messages, but when we get back, we'll be opening our phone lines a bit to allow our listeners to engage and to get their views on the air. We continue our discussion with the political leader of the PP, Philip Edward Alexander. Stay with us. Welcome back. I urge our callers, keep it brief so we can probably get as many in as possible. Mr. Alexander will be with us until just before 8. Let's see who's with us. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish Forrespinia, Honorable Mr. Alexander, right? Now, good when morning, you go sir. About, you, Mr. Rory said nothing has changed. With immediate effect, I hear all UNC councillors have to hit the road. Now, that will be changed. So the first time you'll see every party from now until 2025 will be on the street campaigning. But when you come, exactly, what are the specific changes you want to bring about?
Okay, thank you so much for the question. Specific changes from now until 2025 and probably after that.
I want to bring about?
Yeah, probably just name one or two because you wouldn't have time to name all.
No, we have a big plan.
I know you do.
If you have other callers, you could interrupt me while I can talk, but you just let me know. Yeah?
Okay, just now, let me get one or two of your points because we have a couple.
Yeah, I made a note of the changes thing so we can talk about that. Just bring in all your calls.
Right. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning. Yeah, I'm not, as I tell you, B mobile numbers, we're having real problems with them one way or the other. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning once more, Satish. A pleasant good morning, Mr. Philip Alexander. How are you today?
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
So let me go straight into my point. Satish, I have always been of the opinion, And we all know, and it was proven once more, that Trinidad and Tobago is a two-party electoral state. That's the reality. And any third parties without the support of one of these major parties sometimes causes one party to win instead of another party. And take, for instance...
Okay, County Central, I need you to forget the preamble and get to the question.
Right. Yesterday, yeah. And I was part of it...
I don't think you have a question. You want to talk... He want to talk split the vote, but like any other UNC supporter, he doesn't realize that he's talking about the 200 votes that we get in Digo Martin while ignoring the 700,000 people that didn't come out to vote. So they want to blame us for pulling 200 votes and thinking if you had pull it and give it to Marsha Walker in Digo, she could have win. So that's what they think split vote means. They don't understand the parroting UNC nonsense, and he doesn't have a question to back that up.
Let's focus on the first question. Changes, a couple of those that you plan to implement or you'd like to.
We believe that the failure to communicate is a big problem. 41 constituencies, 14 corporations, 6 regional health authorities, 10 police divisions. We need to change all of that into one. We have a system we want to propose called a constituency board of supervisors, where every one of the constituency would operate as a mini state of its own responsibility for public works, public utilities, education, healthcare, and security. Its own water, its own education results, its own hospitals and health centers, its own policing. If those constituencies could be funded at budget time, and every year the people who live in a constituency know this road will fix and that bridge will build and this school will be redeveloped and whatever, they will have an understanding of how the process works and they'll be able to engage the process. Now the constituency board of supervisors, the local government, because now it'll be government. What we call it local government is not local government, but this will be local government. Satish, I'm with you right through here, so if you want to go beyond 8, I'm with you.
Okay, great.
Local government requires government, and there's nothing like that to call what we have now local government, but what we propose, you could actually have somebody, a supervisor of education, responsible for the educating of all the children in your constituents. Think about how massive a revolution and development that is. If somebody was responsible for capturing, holding, treating, and distributing the water in your constituency, it doesn't become a national problem. It's a local problem, and you could identify all the rivers, all the streams, all the wells, all the way rainfall is captured. Where does it go? How do we hold it? All of a sudden, everybody getting water 24/7. That water policy identifies flood zones as the place to sink retention ponds, so it solves flooding. We're literally going to dig a hole in the ground where the flood traditionally floods and put retention ponds underground so that the water that comes into flood there will go down into retention ponds, and when the rain done, we get forward to the reservoir.
Let's take,
these things make sense.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. We'll run the interview until 8:15 this morning to give people more opportunity to interact with you. Hello, good morning.
Hello, and good morning. So I would like to say to Philip, I say keep up the fight. My friend, I think you have the respect, you earn your respect with the voters. And I think the leaders and them will respect you too. For people who don't know, you have to get in the race. So keep up the fight. And I think you have more respect than some of the UNC personnel who only talking on Facebook. Have a good day and continue.
Okay, thank you. No question there, but let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Another B-Mobile number. I'm sorry about that. Try us on 627-3223 and see if you could get through. And 625-2250. They just had to keep trying, I guess, with the B-Mobile numbers. I'm not too sure why that is happening, but it continues. Hello, good morning.
The mobile should be hearing you and come and fix that problem for you.
Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning. Well, the person hung up. I don't know. Try us back again. So there are many other issues to consider. The perspective that you've outlined to us this morning is that you intend to continue doing the work, and you intend to continue with the campaign of Philip Will Fix It, which we've been hearing a lot about. And that Philip Will Fix It campaign has become so prominent now that, you know, some people turn it into a meme. That anything go wrong, you call Philip and Philip go fix it, just as it was called Gary and Gary go arrest whoever it is and that kind of thing. But that level of support, that level of visibility and that performance, for want of a different term, is, it reminds me of the slogan that Basudev Pandey had coined: performance beats old talk.
Indeed.
But
it, and should be, well, that should be the truth. That should be the mantra. People should be voting people based on that, only that. Not how you look, not how you smell, not who you're dating. I mean, seriously, just vote people into the position who will do the job. You promise to do certain things, you deliver those things. That's all I care about. I don't care how you look. I don't care if you look like me, if you look like an alien from Mars. What's my life improving? The price of gas come down, the price of food come down, I can get credit for my business, I can get foreign exchange to go and visit my children in school. Boy, like yourself, that's how it should be.
Let's take another call. You may not have time to answer, but let's take the call you'll answer just after the 8 o'clock news. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish. The police service needs to clean up the country, but first it needs to clean up itself. Mr. Gentleman, what is your opinion, or what are your plans, if you're in power, for cleaning up the police service? I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'll let you save that response just after the 8 o'clock news, because we do have a couple messages to take us up to the top. And after 8, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a commitment. Mr. Alexander will be with us until about 8:15 this morning. You'll have the opportunity to pose more of your questions, engage in discussions, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM.
This is the Morning Rumble with Satish Mahabir.
Three and a half minutes after 8 to the final hour of our show here this morning. Our guest for a couple of minutes again, political leader of the PEP, Philip Edward Alexander. Before the break, that question was posed to you by one of our callers, and we're taking more of your calls if you'd like to get on to our show this morning. From Mr. Kirep, he spoke about the crime situation, the need for reform of the police service, and what are your plans or your proposals for such?
We were the people who proposed the internal affairs to remove the police complaints authority, police complaints division, and professional service bureau. The professional service bureau is actually the people whose names were called in the Brent Thomas abduction in Barbados, and we waited on Ella Christopher, said that she was supposed to put out a letter in 2 weeks. That was supposed to be May. We ain't get that yet. The prime minister announced something like our internal affairs plan. We work with the New York City Police Department. I actually have somebody who is a senior person in the internal affairs division of the New York City, which is the largest police department in the world. And he has been giving us guidance and plenty information as to how it is done and how they turned New York City from the murder capital of the world to one of the top tourist destinations on the planet through use of cleaning up the police service. So using internal affairs is very important. Body cams is very important. Dashboard cams are very important. You can't uphold a penalty, any tickets, anything, without dashboard cam if it is contested in court and the officer has no access to turn off his dashboard cam or his body cam or to interfere with the content in any way, because then the police department will not stand behind him and defend him if he or her, if they get themselves in trouble. Also, giving bonuses and incentives to police officers. A simple one is when you secure the borders, put $1,000 on every illegal gun and let them bring in the illegal guns. Once no new illegal guns coming into the country, let the police pick the country clean and let them get the bonus. They deserve it.
Yeah, 627-3223-625-2257. We've covered a number of issues. There's obviously a couple others that people will be focusing on, and that's our energy sector. And what's happening with the energy sector? What are some of the plans, the proposals of your party to deal with some of the challenges confronting us in the energy sector?
Well, at this point, we need to redo. At this point, I met with some of the stakeholders. They told me a big problem is the well agreement, the agreement for wells and exploitation of existing wells. I watched this documentary and they were showing how countries increase their supply just by redeveloping their fields, their oil fields and their wells and stuff. So I know that there are plans, there are ways and means to get plans like that underway. I think at this point, we need a redo where we talk to all stakeholders. We need to look at PetroChain in its entirety and decide if we want to reopen PetroChain as a whole. There are segments of PetroChain that are valuable to the road surfacing industry and stuff for the creation of bitumen and things. What you could look at is there benefits to opening sections of PetroChain and monetizing and getting them to profitability as you go? Before you look at just keep talking about open PetroChain again. If PetroChain is going to cost $1 billion plus just to restart, how do we get that money back? You need to be able to make it make sense. But the energy sector, the reason everybody keeps raising the issue about the energy sector is because it represents almost 100% of our national income. And that should have been diversified away a long time ago. Our government should create concentric zones of profitability and confine the energy sector to 25%. So if the energy sector could bring in $100 billion for the year, and you have three other sectors bringing in $100 billion, you're going to win all the wins in the world. You need agriculture and agro-processing. You need tourism. Trinidad's supposed to be playing a massive space in tourism. And marine services. Trinidad has a big place in the marine services if we ever wanted it. But there are other actual industries and ways to bring in billions of dollars worth of value of income into the economy that we want to share at a time when it's not just an idea that's going to be stolen. So I think that the energy sector can be redeveloped to profitability, especially if you bring in the stakeholders and you do sensible private-public sector partnerships, not where people could bill you for oil that you never get and they have no way to check. We need to make sure that you're making sense, that the public-private sector partnership puts profitability in the hands of the operator so that they are responsible and not you, and you're not just covering losses and debts.
Yeah. Looking to 2025, that's the title of the series that we're going to be engaged in moving forward, because, as I said, that's a real prize for many. Stamping your footprint on the political landscape in local government has been achieved. And there was a position put forward recently by former Energy Minister Kevin Ramnarayan. And he is suggesting, just like some suggested in this local government election was of paramount importance, he's suggesting that the 2025 general elections carries with it extreme importance for this country's future. Because he's suggesting that in 2025, the country is going to have to choose somebody to lead and for stewardship through what may be some very, very challenging economic times, given some of the developments or lack thereof in the energy sector. And whoever gets to govern the country from 2025 to 2030 will be responsible for decisions that could have disastrous consequences for this country's future. What do you think? Do you think that 2025 and whoever governs, I mean, in any election, whoever wins has a huge responsibility. But given some of the challenges that are confronting us in the energy sector in particular, is there really that much at stake?
I think Kevin Ramnarayan is engaging in hyperbole. He, like Gary Griffith, like others like him, they have a saying, when the only tool you have is a hammer, you tend to treat every problem as a nail. The energy sector is important to the profitability of Trinidad's economy. But if you diversify Trinidad's economy, where the energy sector plays a role, not the role, and we should have been doing that a long time. But I've had conversations with international stakeholders who are willing to come and engage in businesses in Trinidad and industries in Trinidad that will generate massive jobs. And at the end of the day, that's what's important, jobs. If we get all of our unemployed people employed, that economy will buoy itself from the bottom up, which is what we should have been doing all the time. We keep doing top-down economies and judging the value of the economy by how well the rich do it. We need to judge the value of the economy by how well everybody is doing. There are other global developments that we have to keep our eyes on, more important than the energy sector. There are global health issues and other machinations taking place through this World Economic Forum. We have to be aware of this. Trinidad needs to decide where it's going to be on this new chessboard of global politics. I strongly suggest that Trinidad returns itself to a sovereign singularity in the Caribbean Sea, and that we partner with everybody. We're willing to be a part of the South American partnership. We're willing to be a part of the Caribbean partnership. We're willing to be a part of BRICS. We're willing to be a part of NAFTA. We're willing to be a part of everything. Anybody who wants to deal with us fine, but don't dictate to us. Don't tell us that for us to deal with you, we have to adopt your principles, your policies, your ideology, your dogma. Not interested in that. We're interested in 1.4 million people, and I want to tell you this. Singapore, that is a third the size of Trinidad and Tobago, has between 5 and 7 million people as a population. So why are we still at 1.4 million? We need to attract new, bright people, and we need to redevelop the country. We live on 13% of the space in Trinidad. We have Trinidad. We literally took what the Queen gave us, and we built some things around it, but we never had a plan of how to redevelop Trinidad and Tobago to profitability, to sensibility for all of the people of the country. And those conversations we need to have. But we've never had a government based on leadership, based on vision for the people. So we look at all the things that we got in the box from the Queen, and we keep thinking, let's go back to cocoa. Let's go back to sugar. Hey, what are we doing about oil? There are plenty other things outside there. And we need to ask ourselves, this country, so perfectly placed on the planet, why is it not exploiting all of its advantages?
And that's we're going to have to leave it this morning. A lot to think about. And the journey has only just begun to 2025. There's a lot to discuss, a lot to consider. And I'm sure that a lot is going to happen from now until then. So we will have some more conversations moving forward. Thank you once again for being with us here this morning. It was my pleasure having you as always.
Thank you for having me. Thank you to your listeners. Thanks a lot. Take care of yourself.
And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, how we drop the curtains on this interview with the political leader of the PEP, Philip Edward Alexander.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.